Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding, and welcome to the ABN AMRO Q3 2019 Analyst and Investors Conference Call. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode, and after the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would like to hand over the conference to Mr. Kees Dijkhuizen. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, operator. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the investor and analyst call for ABN AMRO's Q3 results. I'm joined here by Clifford Abrahams, our CFO, and Tanja Cuppen, our CRO. I will take you through the key developments in the last quarter, including the investigation by the Dutch prosecutor. Clifford will go through the details of our third quarter results and run through capital. Tanja will update you on the developments in our loan portfolio. Turning to slide two, I will update you now on the third quarter. The last quarter for us was mixed. Operationally, the bank is doing well, delivering an ROE of 11%. I'm pleased with our robust financial results and solid operational delivery during the quarter. Net interest income remains strong, also on the back of the profitable growth of the mortgage book. Excluding divestments, net fee income increased this quarter. Excluding detecting financial crime or DFC-related costs, costs continue to trend down due to our strict cost discipline. Impairments continue to be moderate at 16 basis points. We are making good progress on the CIB refocus, as demonstrated by the ROE of 9% for this quarter. We are well capitalized and well positioned to manage the transition through TRIM and Basel IV. Meanwhile, we also face challenges. As you are well aware, the bank is currently subject to an investigation relating to requirements under the Dutch Act of the Prevention of Money Laundering and Financing of Terrorism. More about that later. A major sector challenge is the continuing low interest rate environment, hence our strong focus on operational performance. We continue to execute our strategy and purpose, banking for better for generations to come. I was very proud personally have signed the United Nations Principles for Responsible Banking on behalf of ABN AMRO as one of the 130 founding banks. We believe that responsible relations with our clients, investors, employees, and society as a whole gives us an advantage in building trust, supporting sustainable development, and creating positive impact through banking. This year, we have once again been ranked among the world's most sustainable banks in the annual RobecoSAM SAM assessment, achieving 79 out of 100 points, putting us in the top 10% of the most sustainable banks. Let me now update you on some developments in the mortgage market on slide three, as this is one of the drivers of our solid operational performance. I'm really pleased that in this third quarter, our market share in mortgages increased to 22% from 17% last quarter. We currently see good margins in the market, so we let our market share move up. Our strength in the mortgage market is supported by new products, such as the mortgage solution for seniors to cash out on home equity, as well as the 30 years fixed mortgage offer we do now as part of our mortgage originate to distribute platform. We also benefit from our strong operational capabilities. We have a speedy turnaround time for new mortgage loan applications, and this is important for clients in the current housing market. Also, more than two-thirds of our mortgage meetings are done via video banking, enabling a fast, flexible, and personal service. As the Dutch economy is expected to grow by around 1% next year, overall, the outlook for the mortgage book remains positive. To update you on the interest rate environment and our actions, I take you to slide four. As I said before, NII was strong this quarter, despite the challenging interest rate environment. Our asset margins have remained resilient as we are focused on margins over volume. We also remain focused on asset quality in this part of the cycle. Even so, we continue to expect further pressure on NII going forward of around 20 million sequential quarterly impact into 2020 through lower deposit margins. As you are aware, we already charge negative rates to CIB clients and the largest clients in commercial and private banking, and we have followed a step-by-step approach. We have decided that we will not charge negative rates on deposits below 100,000 euros. This commitment, 100,000 euros, sorry. This commitment means around 95% of our clients will be safeguarded from negative rates, representing approximately 40% of our deposit base. In addition, around 40% of deposits are above 100,000 euro threshold and are currently not subject to negative rates. Of course, we also focused on developing more fee propositions, as well as opportunities to increase fees where we can, for example, in commercial banking, in cybersecurity and bookkeeping propositions. In retail banking, great focus on investments and insurance, and in CIB, our increasing focus on originate to distribute. Now, let me update you on the investigation of the Dutch prosecutor and our DFC activities on slide five. In September, we were informed by the Dutch public prosecutor that we are subject of an investigation relating to requirements under the Dutch Act on the Prevention of Money Laundering and Financing of Terrorism. The investigation follows our announcement last August that we are to review all our retail clients in the Netherlands and that sanctions such as an instruction, fines, may be imposed by the authorities. The investigation focuses on whether we have complied with requirements to having client files in good order, timely reporting of unusual transactions and the prompt discontinuation of client relationships. For us, it's a key priority that we fulfill our duties and responsibilities as a gatekeeper of the financial system in detecting financial crime. While the timing of the investigation is uncertain, we are getting on with ensuring we are fully compliant and future fit. We have already centralized our DFC activities, enabling further specialization, consistency, and leverage knowledge across the bank. As you know, we have remediation programs running at ICS, commercial banking, and retail banking. For these programs, we have now taken in total 226 million euro in provisions for external expenses alongside significantly increasing BOW spend on DFC. We expect the step up in spending to continue. We have completed a comprehensive independent review of our organization to ensure full compliance with legislation. We have incorporated recommendations arising from this into a new delivery plan in collaboration with the regulator. We will further update you on this in Q4. We're also in dialogue with public parties to investigate further cooperation to fight financial crime and will explore possibilities of setting up a joint organization to monitor payment transactions with other Dutch banks. We are pleased with the Dutch Cabinet's plan to clamp down on money laundering, improving cooperation between the government and banks and among banks. Strict compliance is a license to operate, so we remain vigilant in detecting financial crime and will continue to make the necessary investments. I would now like to hand over to Clifford to take you through our third quarter results. Clifford.
Thank you, Kees. Turning to slide six, as Kees mentioned, we are pleased with our robust third quarter result, with a net profit of 558 million euros. Net interest income remains strong and fees are higher when you exclude the sale of Starter. Other income was low this quarter, mainly due to low private equity gains, which can be volatile. Operating expenses are well controlled. I'm pleased that impairments are moderate again this quarter at 16 basis points. Tanya will give you more background on this. I'll guide you through the individual line items on the next slides, but first our client lending on slide seven. Kees updated you on developments in the mortgage market. I'm pleased that our mortgage volumes are somewhat higher again this quarter, reflecting our strong market share of new production of 22%. We continue to deliver on our CIB refocus, and the more capital-efficient business model is shaping up. So total CIB volumes are down somewhat this quarter. We've reduced our exposure specifically in TCF, trade and commodity finance, including diamonds, and global transport and logistics. SME lending saw a slight decline, reflecting our focus on margins. Turning now to NII on slide eight. NII remained strong this quarter. Let me remind you that last quarter included 45 million euros in one-offs, largely related to DSB. As you can see on the right, lower liquidity management costs largely offset the around 20 million euros decrease in NII due to low interest rates. Liquidity management costs were lower again this quarter, largely due to the roll-off of some larger FX positions. The 20 million euro decrease due to low interest rates is in line with our guidance from last quarter of around 20 million euros sequentially into 2020, excluding mitigations. It's possible that interest rates have recovered somewhat in the last few weeks after first declining materially following our Q2 results. And looking through the recent volatility, our outlook on deposit margins has not changed materially from Q2. Hence, our guidance remains the same. Following the announcement by the ECB, we expect a positive net impact of the ECB deposit tiering of approximately €60 million per year, and this will mitigate some of the impact. In addition, we continue to work on mitigating the impact of the low interest rate environment. As discussed by Case, we're developing new products, selectively charging negative interest rates to clients, and continue to work on our cost initiatives. As we've said before, we expect NII to be around €1.6 billion next quarter. Turning now to fees and other income on slide 8. I'm pleased that excluding divestments of Stata and Channel Islands, fees are higher somewhat compared to last quarter due to the acquisition of private banking activities in Belgium and a strong quarter by clearing. As you know, in CIB, the business model is becoming less capital intensive and is starting to generate more fees from distribution. We're also working hard to grow income with initiatives on investments and insurance in retail. Other operating income was low, as I said previously. In general, last year, all volatile items were relatively high, while this quarter, more or less every item was low. So truly some volatility there. This is especially the case for private equity gains, which were €107 million in Q3 last year, compared to only €20 million this quarter. XVA was actually negative this quarter, driven by low interest rates and increasing derivative exposures. We maintain our long-term guidance for other income of around €125 million per quarter, although it can be volatile, as you've seen, in any one quarter. Now moving to costs on the next slide. I'm pleased with our performance on costs, which have continued to steadily trend down for a number of years now as a result of our strict cost discipline. As you can see here in the left-hand chart, personnel expenses continue to decline, reflecting lower FTEs. However, other expenses increased this quarter due to higher DFC costs, including an additional provision for commercial banking of €27 million. In the right-hand chart, you see we have realized further cost savings of €53 million versus Q3 last year, bringing the total to a run rate of almost €850 million and on track for €1 billion target in 2020. Year to date, we're running at a cost level of around €5 billion annualized, excluding remediation provisions. And going forward, we expect further material cost pressure for DFC and ongoing wage inflation. But we see some offsetting movements in respect of cost programs. We do not expect major cost programs in the near future, but we'll continue our proven approach of executing ongoing cost initiatives, for example, the greater use of cloud-based services, the introduction of DevOps in our IT teams. And we also continue the product rationalization and process improvement across the business lines and support functions. So continuing steady progress on costs, which will balance the cost inflation that we see from DFC and ongoing wage inflation. I'll now hand over to Tanja to pick up impairments on slide 11.
Thank you, Clifford. Third quarter impairments were moderate at €112 million. This amounts to 16 basis points cost of risk for the quarter and year to date, well below the through-the-cycle cost of risk. We are pleased with our progress in de-risking CIB, and we are happy to see that this is paying off. Impairments in CIB were modest and are mainly in energy, in offshore services and up and midstream, and in diamonds. Impairments in commercial banking were due to the offshore support vessel sectors and a new file in the utility sector. We expect an uplift in impairments in Q4, reflecting in particular in offshore services and in retail banking, predominantly from model refinements. We reconfirm our full-year expectation of below the through-the-cycle cost of risk of 25 to 30 basis points. And now hand back to Clifford to discuss capital.
Thank you, Tanja. So turning now to slide 12, you can see our Basel III capital position remains strong with a CET1 ratio of 18.2%, well within our target range. A small uplift reflects the divestment of our share in Equens Worldline and the Channel Islands. No additional TRIM or model review add-ons were recorded in Q3 2019. Looking forward, we do expect a serious impact on Basel III RWAs from TRIM, model reviews, definition of default, and the announced risk weight floor on mortgages by the DNB taking place in 2020. From our perspective, all of this is front-loading of Basel IV, for which we are already well-positioned. We have a strong Basel IV capital position at around 13.5%, again, excluding our year-to-date profit. Our leverage ratio was also stable at 4.2%. As you know, our prudent capital management reflects the context of commercial and economic circumstances, including lower for longer, as well as a tough regulatory outlook. We will decide on our dividend at full year. I'll now hand back to Kees to update on our targets.
Thank you, Clifford. Operationally, the bank is doing well, and I'm pleased, as I said, with our ROE of 11% this quarter, well being within our target range. However, we need to recognize that the sector is currently facing major challenges, including the continuing low interest rate environment. We are under investigation by the Dutch prosecutor. Strict compliance is our license to operate, and we will continue to make the necessary investments. Given the lower for longer interest rate environment, it will take longer to reach our cost-income target of 56 to 58%. Our capital position and capital generation remain strong, and with a Basel III Core Tier 1 ratio of over 18%, we are well positioned to manage the transition to TRIM and Basel IV. As Clifford indicated, the dividend is a year-end decision. So before we go into Q&A, I would like to briefly recap the highlights on slide 14. As said, the last quarter was mixed, but I'm pleased with our robust financial results and solid operational delivery during the quarter, given challenges across the sector. While dealing with these challenges, we continue to take the necessary action and to focus on our operational delivery. Now I would like to ask the operator to open the call for questions. Operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start a question and answer session now. To be registered for a question, please press star 1 on your phone. For question star 1, we would like you to limit the numbers of questions to 3. First question is from Mr. Pavel Dystik, Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. I have two questions. So the first one is on cost, and you highlighted that you will no longer be able to reach your cost income target, and you made some remarks on your absolute cost base. But, you know, if I was wondering if you can dive a little bit deeper into that. Are you still confident that you can get to around 5 billion cost base next year? And can you give us a little bit more sense and at least a scale of cost inflation that relates to the step up in those costs related to financial crime that you mentioned in your opening remarks? That would be very useful. Then the second question is on your pricing of deposits. You are, again, clear that you will not charge negative rate to deposits below 100,000 euros, but you also highlighted that 40% of balances would not fall under this this restriction and are currently not charged negative rate. So can you help us understand what exactly is the strategy there going forward, and you know how it differs between, let's say, retail, private banking, and corporate clients? Essentially, what prevented you, as you see now, from charging the rates, negative rates, to those clients in the past? And you know, do you think it can change going forward? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I will take the second question, and Clifford, you can take then the first. With respect to the pricing of deposits, it's correct indeed that around 40% of our deposit base, which is around 100 billion. Is not at this moment in time has negative rates. What we've done in the past is that, as I said, we charged our CIB clients and our largest CB and private banking clients. We started with thresholds above 25 million, went down to 10. We see lower amounts in the market right now. We are not allowed to guide on that at this moment in time. So you will have to await our action, and then we will communicate. That's the way we have done it in the past, and if we take action in the future, we will do the same. But you're right, there's 100 billion, let me put it that way, territory where we can apply negative rates going forward.
Pavel, on costs, I'll just say I'm looking at page 5 in the slide deck. But as I said, we're traveling at around 5 billion costs already. So that's our base position, and that's consistent with our planning that we've set out in the past. And that already includes the step up in DFC costs that you see on page 5. So you see year to date, business as usual, detecting financial crime costs actually well ahead of the total spend for last year. So annualized step up. And we expect that step up to continue, I would say, significantly in relation to amount of around, you know, a little over 100 million for the first 9 months. I think going forward, we've taken benefit of provisions in the past, and that will shield some of the incremental costs going forward. You can see the significant provisions we've taken on page 5, but we do expect DFC business as usual costs to step up further, and in due course they may well come down, but for the time being it's an increase. What I would highlight, and I use the word balance on the presentation, is you should see those incremental DFC costs balanced by, our further cost-saving programs. And we're pleased with progress of 850, but that means we have another 150 of cost savings further to go through next year. So quite some potential, and that would give us a balance. You know, I note the consensus that you indicated, but I'll leave it at that, and we'll give further guidance next year as we're closer to the results. I think on cost income ratio, just I sent a final comment there. I think as Kees indicated, we think the cost income ratio target will be delivered later, primarily as a result of income coming down, not cost. So I talked about factors balancing out on the cost front, but it's really the income movement that's caused us to defer that. And I don't think that should come as much of a surprise. So we've reconfirmed the 20 million. Sequential reduction, and that gives rise to hundreds of millions of NII pressure, which we can't mitigate over a period of 1 year. So it's really that's prompted us to indicate today that the target will take longer to achieve. Any further questions?
I don't think so, sir. I'm going to follow with the next question. It's from Mr. Adrian Sigi, RBC Capital Markets.
Questions from my side, one on capital and one on NII. On capital, your target capital ratio of 17.5 to 18.5, how confident are you that it captures the latest uncertainty on the Dutch prosecutor investigator? Or put it differently, are you still aiming for additional distribution above 18.5 range while the AML investigation is ongoing? And on NII, you mentioned that you maintained the 20 million quarterly headwind, and while it's understandable given the volatility in the swap rate, it has been showing quite a material improvement versus the 7th of August, almost 23 basis points to now 27 basis points negative. Can you give us an indication what the 20 million figure would translate into, assuming the current run rate on the swap? Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. I'll take the first one. Clifford, can you take the second?
Yeah.
On capital, our guidance has not changed. The guidance we have had before, as a result of the investigation, of course, at the end of the year, we will take everything into account, so also that. But the 17.5, 18.5, and where we are at this moment in time has not changed.
Yeah, I think on NII and sensitivities, I think we're one of the few banks that give very clear indications of the financial impact. So I think sensitivities would be the best practice in this respect. I'm looking at the rates in Q1 and Q2 and Q3, and we've given guidance. So in Q1, we said 10 million. In Q2, we said 20 million. And now we're saying roughly 20 million. I think the rate picked up relatively recently, at the tail end of Q3 and, October, November. and it looks to me like it's somewhere in between. But I think you, given those data points that I've set out, you can form your own views. When we give guidance, we don't mark to market every quarter. We reflect on our own views of interest rates as well. So it's a judgment rather than a specific estimate reflecting forward rates. And we do see the benefit of rates having picked up. And if they are sustained, you know, we'll update our guidance again in Q4. But let's see how sustainable these rate increases are.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Mr. Stephen Nedialkov, Citi. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. It's Stefan from Citi. Two questions from me as well. Just coming back on the provisions for KYC, financial crime detection, etc., 226 million. Could you provide us with a breakdown of what those provisions were for? Was it extra external costs for consultants? Is it IT, hardware, software, etc.? Color on that would be extremely, extremely useful. And also related to that, I see in your report you talk about 200 to 240 FTEs more or less being hired for these compliance initiatives. Are these employees, or I should say FTEs, here to stay? Are they hired for a period of, say, 12 months? Just give us a breakdown of how many people work on these initiatives. How many of them are internal employees? How many of them are external? And the external ones, when are they likely to leave? We would just like to get a bit more of a grip on this escalation in the compliance band, ideally. And a second question, hopefully a quicker one. Any update on the CEO succession? Thank you.
I will take the second one. Thank you very much, Stephen. No, there's no update on CEO succession. Process is going well. When we can, of course, say something, when supervisory board, of course, they will do that. With respect to the first question, Clifford?
Yeah, just we'll give some color, but we also guided to Q4 where we'll give more detail. I think on provisions, you're right, it is external expenses. So particularly where we have remediation programs, where we are upgrading our KYC files, we take on external staff to which we can ramp up quickly, and those are the bulk of the current sort of increases in FTE. And for those specific costs, we can book a provision for those. Those remediation programs also incur internal costs, and you'll see those come through the P&L later. I think in terms of FTE, over the last 6 to 12 months, a lot of the FTE increases have been around these remediation programs. I think going forward, we expect to see some change in mix of that. As those remediation programs get going, you'll see those numbers flatten off and eventually come down, and we will build up further our business as usual FTEs in relation to detecting financial crime. So those folks will be engaged in transaction monitoring and ongoing file reviews. And in the medium term, we see opportunity to automate and get efficient at these activities. So we'd expect to see costs and FTEs coming down, but that's a little bit far out. So that gives you a flavor for the ramp up and the ongoing developments, and obviously we'll update you going forward.
Clifford, just to follow up on this, do you have around 1,500 people? I have something like that at the back of my mind from previous updates, working on
yes.
KYC, more or less.
Okay.
And of that amount, around 200 to 250 would be external people right now?
No, I won't give a breakdown on that. So it gives you a flavor. I mean, it's just under 10% of our total staff, so we were trying to give an indication of the resource commitment in this area. But it's a mix. It's a mix of internal, but the externals are primarily engaged in remediation, and that we use external or shorter-term staff so we can ramp it up quickly and then in due course bring it down cost-effectively when those programs have been completed.
Okay, but the 1,500, that includes internal people who have been moved from other roles to help with KYC.
Yeah, includes
permanent KYC plus external.
Yeah, and I think if you think about the ramp-up of our costs, we've already got a significant commitment. It's in the numbers that were in the slide we talked about and is also in the 5 billion run rate. So when you think about DFC inflation, we've already absorbed quite a lot of it, although we do expect further inflation going forward, albeit balanced by the cost-saving programs I indicated.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Next question is from Mr. Robin van den Broek, Mediobanco. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on NII. If I take your underlying run rate for Q3 of 1.61 billion and I factor in the 20 million sequential headwind from the replicating portfolio and I add 60 million for deposit tiering next year, I basically get to consensus for next year. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about loan growth perspectives, better loan margin repricing, and the prospects of negative deposit rates. I mean, presumably those should still be positively driving NII next year. I know in the CIB, I think you're still aiming to go up the quality curve, so that probably leaves some NII on the table. But some comments around that would be quite helpful. The second comment is, and I'm sorry to come back on this, but it's on capital. But the fact that your capital ratio on last year's payout ratio is at 18.8% should imply, in fact, that probably your payout ratio year on year should go up, assuming that you will adhere to the 17.5% to 18.5% target range, as you seem to indicate, or is there any risk that you're going to front load some of the headwinds you see coming in next year, amongst others, the more sizable mortgage density risk increase, which is imposed by the Dutch Central Bank? And a small follow-up on capital is that your Basel IV position is still flat year to date. Well, also in Q3, you sold some assets. So why isn't that reflecting your Basel IV position? Thank you.
I start with answering, and Clifford, please, please add. I think portfolio-wise, we're doing good as a bank, and we also expect that to continue next year. As said, mortgages were well placed. We're making good margins. And portfolios grown in the third quarter by 800 million, so that's good. The Dutch economy is performing well, so also on the back of that, we expect to continue SME to finance themselves also via the bank, of course. So that's good. We see growth in that portfolio as well. CIB has delivered a year earlier than expected on the 5 billion reduction risk-weighted assets, so they did a great job there. As said, the third quarter a 9% ROE result, so that's actually very good. We're happy with that. And indeed, looking for better quality deals, more fee-driven, originate-to distribute opportunities and the likes. So from that side, we are positive about that development. On the asset side development, we're positive about NII. Now, with respect to the deposits, Clifford has mentioned the 20 million sequential, and I talked about the 100 billion deposits not having negative rates. So that's the position over there, and you have to make your calculation there. With respect to capital, and I cannot guide you anything new, as said before. Your figure is right, 18.8. Basel IV is 13.5 indeed, excluding profit, but including profit is close to 14, I think. And your asset question, why it's not further improved?
I'll pick that up. Yeah. I think we need to recognize these are quite modest movements. There are actually a couple of things, so a bit technical. So Basel III was a little stronger than Basel IV. And in respect to the disposals, actually the risk weighting for the sold assets was higher under Basel III than Basel IV, because under Basel IV we have the benefit of the output floor. So that benefit was lower in Basel IV. And we also shifted some of our sovereign exposures. And the Basel III regime is actually a bit more favorable risk weight for these assets in the target credit weightings than they are under Basel IV. So some very specific explanations, but you can see the regimes are slightly different. So at the margin, the effects are a little bit different. But big picture, excluding accrued profit, our Basel III is pretty flat, and our Basel IV is pretty flat. And I think that gives us confidence, given the given the strength of the business and the more challenging market environment.
Maybe one follow-up on the NII question. Okay, so I appreciate what you said, that you're positive on the asset side of the balance sheet. But if I would take similar rationale from the Q2 starting point of 1.64 billion, your underlying seems to have dropped by more than 20 million. Is there any specifics on why that is the case?
I think I highlighted the incidentals. I mean, you see our bridge on page 8. Again, these are quite small movements. There's always a few things going on in the numbers, but we see underlying around 1.6, hence our guidance for Q4, and I think Case has run through the developments for next year.
Okay, cheers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Benoit Petarki, Capital Chiffel. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. Questions on my side. So first one is on the money laundering part. So could you update us on the kind of main outcome from the review you have done of the DFC? I think you said in your presentation that you put recommendations in a new delivery plan submitted to the regulators. Could you give us the main kind of corals or highlights from this plan? Is there any serious issues reported to the regulators? Second one is on the other income. I think you still maintain your kind of 125 million per quarter guidance. I think the underlying is much weaker than that. Why are you confident to maintain kind of the 125? Do you expect higher private equity gains next year, or what makes you confident on this guidance? And the last one was just maybe on this negative rate opportunity. I don't think there's much banks putting a treasury hold at 100K. So could you give us a bit more details? For example, putting a treasury hold at 1 million instead of 100K, how much of your deposit will actually be in scope for a deposit cut? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your questions. I'll take the first and the last. Clifford, can you take the second? With respect to money laundering, I think it's best practice that you hire also, in these cases, an external party to also check if you have done everything to best practices in the market. That's what we've done. We had a plan already sent to a central bank, and we have augmented that further after the benchmarking we also got from the external party. So I think that is best practice, improvements from their side, incorporated that in our plans and send that now to regulators. So that's there. With respect to negative rates, I think there is, we can further break down. I don't have all the figures, but for instance, to give you one indication around, it's a bit over 30 billion, for instance. You see some amounts in the market around 2.5 million. This actually is for us around a bit over 30 billion, for instance, to give you an indication, which is above 2.5 million for us.
Okay, and just on other income, Benoit, I think if you look at the chart, and I concur with your view that the other income has been, call it, at the low end of the range or lower than our guidance in the last few quarters, but was actually materially higher prior to that. And so when we look at the volatile items, we can't see a structural change. But we note there's been, you know, clearly volatility. And if we do see a structural change, we would update our guidance. So I think the nature of that bucket is you always get volatile items, and just to exclude them all and look at underlying, I don't think it's the right way of doing it. I think look at it over time and then consider whether there's sort of structural changes to it, which we don't think they're the case. I think we've been disappointed on relatively few private equity gains this year, and we've got meaningful capital still committed and expect a return on that, which will come through the other income line going forward.
Sorry, could you update us? Thank you for the answers. Could you update us on the size of the portfolio for the private equity portfolio?
Yeah, it's around 600 million euros.
600 million euros. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Albert Ploeg, ING Bank. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions as well. The first one, to come back to the negative rates. So basically today, 20% of the deposit base already is subject to negative pricing. So can you maybe help us a little bit how much that is in terms of NII on an annualized basis, and what kind of levels is currently being charged? Because also, to understand, as mentioned earlier, 40% of the base is of the deposit base is not yet subject to negative pricing, but could potentially. But the current clients already have negative rates, and apparently they have accepted this. So to also understand a bit what kind of headroom you have on the existing deposit base that is subject to negative pricing. So that's the first question. The second one is on the capital, and sorry to come back a little bit to previous question on the RWA outlook also for Q4 in hand sales. So the dividend. I know there are a lot of known unknowns in that respect on RWA headwinds, but are there already some you think you already know that will come in Q4, or do you very much expect to get some feeling on what the RWAs may end up for the full year at least, because Q3 obviously was actually in that respect a positive surprise. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll tackle those two, and Tanya, please help if I lose my way. I think on negative rates, look, the bulk of that is in CIB that we charge currently, and so I would just look at the CIB segment disclosure. Effectively, we're passing on, call it, the market rate in those areas, right? So we're not making material margins on CIB deposits, but neither are we losing money. Because those are not part of our replicating portfolio typically. And so the margin pressure is really on, reflects the two buckets of 40% that Case talked about. And he gave you some guidance around pricing in that context. Mm-hmm. I think on RWAs, I talked about inflation. We see that very largely in 2020, all those regulatory headwinds. I mean, it's possible some of that lands before Q4, so TRIM, it's possible, but we think more likely next year. And so clearly, as you'd expect, I think one of the earlier calls is the dividend is not a mechanical calculation. So if we don't get the inflation in Q4, but we expect it in Q1, we're not going to ignore that in our judgment around dividends. So that capital target is the zone in which we would consider additional distributions, not a mechanical framework.
Yeah, maybe to come back on the follow-up on that, because I know your dividend policy in a way is formulated quite mechanical, and we all know the environment that banks operate in. So, but in a way, I mean, you've been paying 145 for the last 2 years. Consensus was always way above those levels, and in the meantime have even come below for 19 and also for 2020 on the 145. So how important is it for ABN AMRO to have at least a stable dividend, or is it or is it not sacred, so to speak?
Yeah, we don't guide on that right now, Albert. Sorry for that. But that is a Q4 decision.
Nice try. Next question.
Next question is from Mr. Tarek Majad from L. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. Just one question, actually, on the costs, to come back to that. So in the slide 10, you effectively mentioned that yesterday the annualized run rate is around 5 billion, but that's excluding the remediation provisions. And so how are you confident to still reiterate the 5 billion, despite actually mentioning that this remediation and DFC costs and compliance will continue to ramp up? I understand that there is still some cost savings to come, you know, around 150 million, but this were already factored in your initial 5 billion guidance. So I'm just trying to really understand here the different moving parts. And maybe just quickly on the dividend, to follow up on the previous questions, do you have in mind progressivity of dividend or just sustainability, in a sense that you still want to be able to pay a decent dividend over time? Thank you.
Take the second one. We don't have the progressive dividend, as you know, and the guidance is, as mentioned before, that Q4 we will look at the target range and all our expectations around that at that moment in time. With respect to cost, Clifford?
Yeah, I think, look, we haven't reconfirmed the 5 billion for next year. We're sort of careful in how we choose our words. I think we are. You're right. When we indicate the run rate of 5 billion, that does exclude the remediation provisions, that 200 million or so. However, that does include the current 5 billion does include this step up in detecting financial crime costs in business as usual to date. So I would say I'm pleased that we've managed to absorb that meaningful inflation and still be today at around 5 billion, and still have 150 million of cost savings. So that gives you a feel for, call it our buffer or headroom in our ability to absorb further detecting financial crime costs going forward of a business as usual nature. But as Kay said, look, we'll make the necessary investments. We think ensuring that we're fully compliant is money well spent, and we'll spend the money to do that. We're doing that cost efficiently, but we need to make the necessary investments. Outside that, the business is very focused on continuing our track record of consistent cost discipline, which you've seen quarter on quarter over the last few years, and that will continue.
Okay, I didn't get really the full answer, to be fair. I know you tried, but you are not confirming the guidance. You're trying, you do your best to achieve it, but at this stage, given the compliance costs and so on, it's still difficult to get to the 5 billion.
What we're saying is that we are currently at around 5 billion. Right? Mm-hmm. There are cost headwinds, which we flagged, but there are also further cost savings. And so precisely where that balance lands, we're not calling today, but given the quantums, you know, you can form your own view.
Okay. And in terms of this extra investments, in your previous answer in the call, you mentioned that some of them might decrease over time. Fair enough, you said it's not soon, but later. I mean, the experience shows that other banks that were involved in money laundering in the past, this becomes quite sticky and structural costs, and probably you need a new savings program to offset these and absorb these. So if I understand, this is not something you contemplate at the moment, to put in place saving programs to offset these costs?
Now, we are thinking about it, but I think it's early days in terms of how we communicate externally. And I think the key message is that we expect the ramp-up to continue. I do think, big picture, I think the business-as-usual costs on AML will be higher in the future than the past. I don't think that should come as any surprise to you, even after the benefits of automation. And these costs are meaningful at the margin of our cost base, but in terms of our overall spend, you know, still relatively small proportion, but it's clear that we and the banking sector as a whole will need to put material resource commitments to this going forward, even if we can automate a lot of these activities.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question is from Mr. Bajoris de Groot Pieterkamp. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. Sorry to come back on the dividend policy. You are now already on target, and if you include profits above target regarding your Basel IV ratio, your Basel III ratio range was set so high because of the Basel IV impact, and the regulatory pressures you expect in 2020 are only having an effect on the Basel III impact. So I was wondering, when you decide about the dividend, will you also look at what the Basel IV ratio is at that time, or are you simply keeping a look at the Basel III ratio, including what you foresee as regulatory pressures? You have already any idea on a quantified impact of those pressures, by the way? And then my second question is, relating to NII, how much do you plan, or have you decided already, to put in TLTRO? And also, there was a speech yesterday by Benoît Cœuré saying that even also Dutch banks are starting to lend money to Italian banks in order to offset further their cash surplus. Are you participating in that?
Thank you. We will at year end also look at Basel IV, so not only Basel III. We will look at both. Any indication about the regulatory pressures? I don't think so.
No. So on the other elements, I think we don't have current plans to take advantage of new TLTROs given our funding alternatives, and our exposure to Italy generally is pretty modest.
And it has not increased in the last month, let's say.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from Jean-Pierre Lambert at KBW. Go ahead, please.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. Two questions, please. The first one is regarding the risk of a fine. As you are in discussions with the authorities, at what point would you consider prudent to take provisions for such a fine to build up a buffer, if you want? The second question is regarding to the cost. I'm sorry to come back to the 5 billion cost base. So you have about 133 million already included if you annualize, and that's the green part of the stack in page or slide 5. But then if you do some calculations with cost inflation and the savings you're indicating, 150 million potentially, so then you could afford about 207. So the total you could afford to have flat cost base, if you want, or the 5 billion, would be for DFC around 320, let's say. So what are the chances of your costs of DFC going above the level of 240? What are the chances of the cost base for DFC next year to be above 340? Thank you.
Thanks, Jean-Pierre. Clifford, you take the second one. First one, I think we can only take that into account when we have a clear indication about a fine. We cannot do that just randomly.
Yeah. IFRS tests would apply.
Yep.
I think your calculation sounded pretty good to me in terms of measuring the bar and thinking through the ability to absorb further inflation on DFCs. That sounded pretty good. I'm not going to give a likelihood on above or below. I think that if you work through that approach, which I thought was good, that the delta is pretty small in relation to 5 billion, right? So it should give you a feel for the balances involved. And we're not calling above or below, but order of magnitude, it feels like you've got the right approach to me.
Thank you. But then I can see you mentioning that you have a plan, a new delivery plan. So you must have some idea of the potential cost in 2020.
Yeah. So we do. I think you know, as you'd expect, we're very, very much on top of these matters. I think the caution in giving we're not giving a specific forecast for the total cost base, so we're not going to give specific forecasts for individual items. I think where our caution is, in some parts of the plan, things will go well, and sometimes in some areas things may go less well, and we'll adapt the plans to reflect that. And so we recognise this as an area of focus, and we'll be happy to update on Q4, and we'll have more to talk about at that point.
Great. Thank you very much for your help.
Next question is from Mr. Kiri Sijayaraja, ASBC. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, everyone. First question on the Dutch mortgage volumes, and you know, you usually get a year-end spike in repayments. I just wondered, do you expect that to be a bit more severe this year because you've increased the incentive for people to run down their deposits and then simultaneously pay down their mortgages? So, in other words, does the push into negative rates further encourage household deleveraging, particularly if kind of the other big banks in the Netherlands sort of follow your push today? And then secondly, just follow up on the your guidance for model updates and increase in the 4Q cost of risk. Is that is primarily just IFRS 9 stage 1 and stage 2 provisions we're talking about, or is there something else going on that we should expect in 4Q? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Tanja, if you take a second, I'll take the first. Indeed, Q4 is always a quarter where people, because the 1st of Jan is a taxable moment, that people look into opportunities to pay back some extra mortgages. We don't expect it actually to be more severe. Of course, it's new. What we've decided today, communicated today. So we don't know, of course, it's the first quarter, we'll see. But we have no expectations yet that that will be clearly more severe. But it will be always, portfolio will go down in the fourth quarter that we have seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, thank you for your question. On the model updates, indeed we are reviewing the IFRS 9 models, actually all models, stage 1, 2 and 3. And it will mean some changes in the model provisions in all these three stages.
Okay, got it, thanks.
Next question is from Ms. Alicia Chung. Exchange, go ahead, please.
Morning, everyone. A couple of questions from me. First of all, you highlighted to us not so long ago that the definition of default would be one of the headwinds for ABN in terms of capital. Is this something that you can now come back to us and give us some sense of the quantification of that headwind, at least a kind of a ballpark view? Also, can you give us an update on how we should be thinking about the risk weighting of NHG mortgages under Basel IV, which may or may not be another 90 bip headwind? And then secondly, on provisions, you know, your coverage ratio now stands at 28% on a group level, and the coverage ratio on corporate loans has been falling every quarter now for the last four quarters, while stage three loans have been picking up. Can you explain what is driving this? And also, given the ongoing challenges in CIB and the very low coverage ratio there, how should we think about the provision outlook for next year? Is it fair to expect it to move within your through-the-cycle range now? Thanks.
Thanks, Alicia. Can you answer them, Tanja?
Yeah, so on your question with respect to definition of default, well, I think not a lot we can say at this stage, yet we are in the midst of implementing this into our systems and are looking at impact, but also on at regulatory feedback. And we expect that to come either this quarter or in Q1. So hopefully we can update you more on that in the next quarter. On the NHG, there have been no developments there. So we Well, we continue to include it in our Basel IV guidance as we did before. And with respect to the coverage ratio on our stage three, you've seen that indeed over the past year coming down somewhat. Last quarter, that had to do with the fact that we changed our definition of default and unlikely to pay triggers for mortgages. And that led to an increase in stage three loans and a drop in coverage ratio, given the low coverage on these assets. This quarter, we had some inflow from CIB assets that are covered by collateral and therefore have a low coverage ratio as well. So that's that are the reasons. Towards next year, I think you mentioned that already. The economy is doing okay. We expect a 1% GDP growth in the Netherlands, so you need to consider that in our outlook. You can expect that our provisions will move somewhat towards the average cost of risk that we guide.
Okay, thank you. Very clear. To clarify, on the NHG mortgages, you said that is within your Basel IV guidance. So in your Basel IV guidance, what risk weighting do you give to NHG mortgages?
So it's a 0% weighting.
Yeah.
Sorry?
A 0% weighting.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press star 1 on your phone. For any additional questions, please press star 1. Go ahead, please. There's a question from Mr. Robin van den Broek, Mediobanca. Go ahead, please. Mr. van den Broek, your line is open. Go ahead, please.
sorry to come back on the queue. Just one question on the remediation provisioning. I was just wondering what's driving the forward-looking guidance potentially here. Is it simply the temporary FTEs, the external FTEs, and the speed of their file handling that could make you provision more or less going forward? What are the drivers there? Secondly, on the IT investments, I think you've been hinting that they can come down. That's not part of the 150 million remaining cost save program, if I understand correctly. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I'll pick up both. So on you're right, on the remediation provision, we make a series of assumptions about number of files that we need to remediate, how long it takes, and the cost of doing that. So a key driver is the velocity and quality of our file reviews. So that's I would highlight that as a key factor. And what you see typically is when you start, it takes a while for these files to be reviewed, the quality. But as you get going, you get the machine working, quality improves, velocity improves. So there's sort of more uncertainty at the beginning. That's generally how these things work. I think in terms of IT investments, I think you're right that we had a series of cost programs. We had the original cost program that was announced in 16. We had further cost savings identified in respect of the corporate bank, and that's around a billion. And then we set out yet further cost savings in respect of IT. And moving towards the sweet spot in IT, but that was always expected to take place over a period of years, but we're expecting some of that into next year. So, we feel good about our cost-saving programs alongside, the necessary build-up in detecting financial crime resources.
Okay, that's clear. And just one silly follow-up, but the fact that we're moving into Christmas doesn't affect the speed of file handling for the remediation provisioning in Q1?
We plan for Christmas. So,
okay, that's great. Cheers.
Thank you. Any other questions?
There's a question from Mr. Bajor at the Groot Pieterkam. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Sorry, also two follow-up questions. You state that the fees in private banking were up thanks to the acquisition. Could you give us some underlying flavor what fees were doing without the acquisition? And then you also took a very small provision for SME derivatives. Could you confirm that that is now completely behind us, that that is now completely finished?
Yeah, I think the on private banking fees, we saw the benefit also this quarter of recovered equity markets. So our fees in the private bank reflect all sorts of things, but in particular, the quarter start valuation levels. And so, you know, we're pleased to see that equity markets have moved up this year, and that's also supported fees coming through the private bank.
So there is some underlying growth also there.
Yeah. I mean, there's structural changes, you know, developments going on in that industry year on year, but quarter on quarter, we're seeing, we were pleased with developments, and NAA was positive in that business. So that was one reason for my, you know, confidence around fees earlier. And the second question,
just SME derivatives.
Oh yeah, is it our?
Are we done?
Yeah.
Are we done? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
There are no more questions. Please continue.
Okay, then I would like to thank you all for your questions. This concludes then our Q3 results update, and thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the ABN AMRO Q3 2019 Analyst and Investors Conference Call. You may now disconnect your line and have a very nice day.